Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
We'll get to the Mets and Yankees coming up. Yankees are in Cincinnati for a little interleague play with the Cincinnati Reds. And the Mets are at home welcoming in the Atlanta Braves, who did a great job. Give the Braves credit. They swept the Mets. They're at an all-time high. Brian Snitker said, we're back. We're feeling like ourselves again. And they did a tremendous job over the weekend backing that up by losing 2 out of 3 to the Marlins. So that made me laugh. But it won't make me laugh if the Mets then lose to the Braves again.
Right.
I'll smile now, but if it turns into 4 more for Atlanta or 3 out of 4 for Atlanta, then we'll be crying. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. Fanatics Fest was obviously a fun time. We did our show out there on Friday. Tommy and Sean did a great job out there on Sunday. The station was out there all weekend. And there was this viral moment that I'm sorry, was completely fixed with Kevin Durant being traded live on stage.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, who's the worst liar of all time, admitted with Kay Adams after he had an idea that he was being traded and admitted he pretty much orchestrated going to Houston. So what I am predicting, I think that Michael Rubin basically told us this without telling us this when he was in.
That's true.
Because he said it's going to be a great weekend. You can't even imagine some of the viral moments. I think Rubin and Durant and Shams, who's probably a part of this too, realized he's going to be traded before the draft. We all know that. I will break the news when Kevin Durant is on stage at a panel at Fanatics Fest, because it'll be cool.
Of course.
And that's exactly what happened.
Right. And it went viral.
And it went viral. But the idea like Durant was blindsided.
No, he was never blindsided. He knew he was getting traded.
He knew. Now, the question is, which of us knew where he was being traded? Because we made a prediction a few weeks ago on Kevin Durant's acquired team. So let's see how we did. Let's go to our prediction desk once more with Sean Morash and Tommy Lugauer. Who should we hear from first?
Let's go to Tommy Lugauer.
Tommy Lugauer.
I'm with Sean, Spurs.
Well, then you should have gone with
Sean
first.
We probably should have went Sean first. So we'll go Sean now.
We're going to call a timeout. Tommy, I want you to read the cut I put in.
It said Lugauer, Durant prediction. Oh, you said play after. Well, buddy, I'm sitting to your left. Why didn't you whisper something to me right before I hit?
Because I forgot.
I literally just told you, let me go first.
So, I know the audience doesn't care. I labeled this in a way where Tommy would clearly read he shouldn't play something until after somebody else had said it.
But forget the labeling. Evan threw it to our desk. I, off air, said, go to Lugauer first, go to me first, and you went ahead with it.
Yeah, because I thought that was reversed. Okay, let's start over. Let's play Sean first.
Okay, let's hear from Sean.
San Antonio Spurs.
San Antonio Spurs. I wonder what Tommy said.
Let's hear
what
I'm with Sean, Spurs.
Huh. Okay, play Tiki next.
Houston Rockets.
Nailed it! Nailed it! Nailed it!
Which leads us to play Evan.
I'm going to go with Tiki. I'm going to say the Houston Rockets.
That's what I'm talking about.
Damn right, baby!
My reasoning for the Rockets, which really didn't turn out to be the case, to be fair, was that the Rockets could offer the picks back to Phoenix that they got from the Nets, and they only sent back one first-round pick that came from Phoenix, which is this year's 10th pick. And I think the return sucked. Like, Jalen Green is pretty much a negative asset.
Right.
I know he's young and he scores a lot of points. He's not exactly a valuable piece that you want to build around.
No, my reasoning was different, though. My reasoning was they're, 52 wins last year. They were second in the West. And they have this young team that's really good but needs a veteran.
Mm.
And so why not go get the ultimate mercenary veteran in Kevin Durant, who's now on his 5th team?
Well, let's count. Does Seattle and Oklahoma City count as one team? They should.
Yes.
Seattle, Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Golden State.
Yes.
Brooklyn. Phoenix. And now this.
Fifth team. And it's, look, he still can play.
Well, this leads to one last long-term prediction.
I'm looking at their roster, by the way. Other than Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, he's gone, but whatever. He was 22. Amen Thompson, 22. Dylan Brooks, he's now gone. He was 29, but Alperin Sengun, he's 22.
Shengun.
He's a stud. Jabari Smith Jr., he's 21.
Very young team.
The whole team is less than 24.
And then you got old man KD.
KD and Fred VanVleet.
That's right. KD always loved Fred VanVleet, because I remember that there were rumblings when KD was with the Nets. Boy, he'd love to play with Fred VanVleet. Anyhow, one last long-term prediction for the day. There won't be another one. Maybe there will be. It'll pop into my head. will this be Kevin Durant's final NBA team? And if not, where will he play next?
You like that one? That's a good one.
This is
Let's
easy.
Go. That's easy?
Yeah, this is easy.
All right, Tiki Barber goes first.
Mm, no. Brooklyn Nets.
Okay. So yeah, Tiki Barber says Kevin Durant will not end his career with the Rockets. He will then play for the Brooklyn Nets.
And why? Because he was asked at Fanatics Fest.
Hey, man, are you traded? Blah, blah, blah.
He's like, I'm a net for life.
Well, hold on. Let's get the proper context. The context was, hey, KD, don't you wish you signed with the Knicks?
Yes.
And Durant's response was, no, I'm a net for life.
There you go.
Which
he just told us.
Yeah, he told us the future.
You weren't listening, but he just told us.
Sean Morash, will the Houston Rockets be Kevin Durant's final team?
No, he will finish his career at home with the Washington Wizards.
Washington what? Wizards?
No.
From the D.C. area.
Yeah, but his moms don't care.
Tommy Lugauer.
No, Kevin Durant will finish his career with the Lakers.
Mm. I love the fact that no one thinks he's ending his career with the Rockets.
This might only be a year.
Come on, it's a free agent at the end of the year.
That's what I mean. That's why I can't say definitely he's finishing his career with the Rockets.
But Durant had power in this, which means teams were scared off by KD saying he wouldn't sign an extension.
Yes.
Which means he's made it clear to the Rockets he would sign an extension. So I think you guys are half right and half wrong. Kevin Durant will play for another team after this, but it's not going to be immediate. KD wants to play until his 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really does. And I think he can, as crazy as it is. He's not going to be the player he is now, right, or even the player he was 5 years ago. But I think KD, as a spot-up shooter, is going to try to play in the league into his 40s.
There's no doubt. He's 7 foot. He can get to his spot. Even if he's old and can't move, he can still get to that spot and take a shot over anybody.
100%. I agree with you.
Unless you're putting a 7'2 center on him, which is now a mismatch in his advantage. Even if he's old, he can still get around that guy. He's going to be able to score for another 5 or 6 years.
I agree.
Period.
And that is why Kevin Durant will play with the Houston Rockets. He'll even play there for a few years.
Mm.
But he won't end his career there. And I think it's obvious where he's going to end his career. And Tiki, as always, is spot on.
The hapless Nets.
Stop. He is, as he said, his words, which don't even make sense. I'm a net for life. Well, let me tell you something, buddy. If you want to be a net for life, you have to right the wrong of the way your net tenure ended.
Mm.
So once the Nets are built properly, which God willing they will be,
right,
in 2 to 3 years, you can make your gallant return. And
I'm telling
voila.
You, it's happened. His guy, Rich Kleiman, is here. He wanted to be here. The problem is it all fell apart because of Kyrie and James Harden being knuckleheads in their respective ways, and he had to leave.
No, he didn't have to leave. That's the part I'll disagree with you about. He didn't.
What was he going to do? Sit in mediocrity for 3 years?
Yeah, and you know why you do that? I'll tell you why. It's the same reason Giannis...
Because you endear yourself with the fan base?
What have you always said about KD? You said he doesn't have a franchise.
But he doesn't... I don't think he wants one.
Well, then if he doesn't want one, he made the right decision. I'm just telling you, the reason why Giannis Antetokounmpo made the right decision to say, I'm going to stay in Milwaukee, is even if they don't win another NBA title,
he's
a god there.
Right.
Kevin Durant, for a hapless fan base like us, if he stuck around, even if though it wouldn't have been necessarily good for the long-term future of the Nets, because you're building around the guy who can't stay healthy, who's old, and you have no draft picks, and all that, Nets fans would have loved him. I would have loved him. I'd still be wearing his jersey.
But you know what? I think you still love him anyways.
If he comes back?
I think you still love him anyways.
I don't love him.
Yes, you do.
You think so?
I do.
Think there's a secret love there?
It's like one of those, you broke up with me and I hate you, but if you come back, we're good.
You know why? You're
I'm
sort
so
of,
right.
You're sort of right. Here's what happened. All right? I'll explain this real quick and then we can get to your calls.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
An ugly guy, okay? Not actually ugly, even though some people may think that. But I'm an ugly guy, and I'm picked on by my big, disgusting brother known as the New York Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
And all they do is insult me and remind me how ugly I am and how no attractive girl would ever look at me twice.
Right.
I'm an attractive woman.
While they go get all the attractive girls.
Well, not really. See, that's the flaw with the story.
They got no attractive girls.
Yeah, they do. What
no.
are you talking about?
They have no attractive girls, but they would.
Jalen Brunson's not an attractive?
No. Years ago. I'm talking about 2018.
I thought you were talking about now.
No. The lead up to what makes KD special. So they would always tell us what kind of loser we are. Meanwhile, they're fat and disgusting and they smell. But they're telling us no one will ever come to us, yet all we hear about is there. You know, that blonde, she's going to hook up with me. That brunette, she's going to hook up with me. And every time, they're left, you know, blue, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Every time. And so all of a sudden, Kelly Taylor, we'll call her, walks through that door, pushes the fat guy to the side, and goes to a scrawny, ugly people, that the Brooklyn Nets, and not only hooks up with us, but we had a wild night. But then she left us, and we thought we were getting married. We thought this was long term. We thought this was forever. Now, if she ever walks back through that door and says, hey, let's do this the right way, even though she's a little bit older now, still damn attractive, you're damn right. It would be the happiest ending of all time.
Yes. This was like Forrest Gump. That's how Forrest Gump happened, right?
That's right. Did you like that story?
I did like that.
Was that an accurate description of everything?
Yes.
It actually was.
I mean, you left a few parts out, but we don't have to rehash why Kevin Durant picked the Nets over the Knicks. We don't have to go over that.
Well, she pushed the fat guy to the side.
Okay. I'll let you have your moment.
And hooked up with us.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're out there screaming, Jenny.
Jenny. We're the Forrest Gump of the NBA. That's a good point. We're part of all these historical moments, but as losers.
No, you know why we're not the Forrest Gump of the NBA? We're never ping pong champions.
That's true. We always lose that ping pong championship. Let's go to Chris up in Michigan. Hey, Chris.
Fellas, how's it going? How's the weather there?
Disgusting, but thanks for asking.
We got flood warnings down here. Ever since that Pacers game ended, we got all their tears floating up here. It's crazy.
That's great.
So I called about the injuries you guys talking about in the NBA to get a little bit more serious and stuff. I'm not going to preference and say, hey, I'm some NBA-type player or anything, but I think it's the shoes, and I'm going to give you a little bit of info on why. They're so much lighter and cheaper made. They're not cheaper to buy, don't get me wrong, but they're cheaply made. A lot of foam, the insoles slide around. I know NBA players, they change their socks and everything when they get slippery, but I play a little bit of basketball, and I truly cannot wear the shoes that they make now. I actually have to buy older ones on eBay. And then just to give you a little bit of a preference here, for whatever reason, my mom kept my shoes from my seventh grade year. They were the Gary Payton 2s, the gloves.
Yep.
I took those out and brought them out with my shoes now, which my feet have grown immensely. They went from like a 7 and a half, and now I wear 12. The amount of weight difference it's crazy. And I don't remember seeing all these Achilles injuries and the knee blowouts.
No, you're right.
When I was watching the NBA.
Chris, you're making a valid point. And I saw the same thing in the NFL, too, because we've seen an increase in Achilles injuries in the NFL as well. And it's the same thing, right? The shoe is designed to be light because it makes you feel lighter. But that doesn't necessarily protect you or support you the right way. I remember when I was playing, I used to wear those little, like those receiver cleats. They were just tiny. And I'm like, man, my ankles are going to get jacked up. So I started wearing this heavy cleat. It had a thick heel on it. And I never got hurt in my lower body again. So you might be onto something, but I think guys just, they love the look of the low profile, the effortless looking shoe. Even though it's not really good for you.
Mm. JR in Somerville. Hey, JR.
Yo. Hey, that's not a bad point by that guy. Hoop shoes, they got heel lock now, too. So on the bottom of the shoe, you know, they lock your heel in, keep it, you know, and grip is so important. It keeps you, you know, to the court when you take those negative steps. So definitely something. Definitely something. Hmm. Also regarding the injuries, the whole thing, Adam Silver came out with an idea regarding 40 minutes a game. I thought it was a great idea. Oh, people deadpanned it.
I hate it.
It's a great idea. Just for a regular season, just do it. You can do 48 minutes in the postseason, but if you do 40 minutes a game in a regular season, you actually cut down. you guys talk about Clark Schmidt later. It's all about the up downs. It's not the number of pitches. Nothing. It's not about the volume. It's about the times that you got to get up and get down.
But don't you
think they just reduce that a couple times?
But Jared, don't you think and I get the financial reasons for why they don't want to do it. But don't you think cutting down on the amount of games would do more for that than cutting out the?
They will never do it. They'll just never do it. I think that getting rid of a couple commercial breaks is more realistic.
Yeah, the thing I wonder about, and I wonder aloud about this, is if you cut the NBA game from 48 minutes to 40 minutes, the NBA is already a quick game. It's already very quick. You go to an NBA game, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes. Now you're cutting out
time. It's under 2 hours, right.
Yeah, like, are people still going to want to go as much if they know their night out is less than 2 hours? Maybe I'm thinking out loud and that's crazy. Maybe everybody would still go the same amount of time. I'm just thinking, like, wouldn't that hurt people a little bit?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think of the standard night. And an engagement, an entertaining engagement. So, sporting event, Broadway show,
movie,
concert. It's always over 2 hours.
Right.
Maybe MLB, you'll get. Oh, that was quick. You know, three up, three down for most of the game. Maybe it'll be over in an hour and 50 minutes. But that's the anomaly out of 162 of those, right? So, if you're trying to intentionally be under 2 hours. What JR said is right. Like, you're cutting out TV revenue. Now, the reality is, if you cut out regular season games, I think TV sponsorship becomes much more expensive for the sponsor.
I mean, right.
They have to pay more because there's less opportunities. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Live sporting events are really the only things that get advertisers to spend money. It's why the NFL dominates so much monetarily. Because you got one game, you know that millions and millions of people are watching it or watching those stations, you know, for that entirety of that day. Like, because there's scarcity, it's made it more expensive.
Yeah, the truth is, I just heard what I said. What I said is stupid. Like, I have to admit, I want to erase that. The truth is, the reason I'm against 40-minute games is my own kind of issue with it.
What do you mean?
My own, okay. So what I said was, are people still going to go to games if it's a shorter night out? I'm wrong. People are still going to go. I thought about it. Dumb point by me. Strike it from the record. I think my issue with Adam Silver's idea and JR kind of checking it off like, hey, why not, is what the hell was that?
Right.
I heard something shake. Was that an earthquake or a thunder?
Hmm.
Are we about to die?
No. I think you're just kicking the ground.
I didn't take anything. I'm sitting with my legs crossed.
You might have passed wind because I didn't feel anything.
I didn't feel or hear anything, and now you just get the crap out of me.
All right.
So can we just get back to the NBA?
I felt something shake. So if this is our last conversation ever, it's about freaking basketball and 48-minute games. What a way to go out.
Right.
Anyhow, I think it's my own issue. Like, if someone ever said to me, and I actually heard BT and Sal talking about this briefly in baseball, cutting a baseball game to seven innings.
Right.
It's the dumbest idea ever.
No, you can't do that.
Cutting
that
football game.
History.
Right. So I think I feel that way about basketball. It's a 48-minute game.
Right.
You can't cut it to 40 minutes.
The way you fix this is by cutting the number of games.
Well, that's my point.
Right. I agree with you. The game itself has to stay the same, just for, I mean, continuity's sake. And it makes sense. I mean, 48 minutes is not too long. It's just playing so many back-to-back games and guys getting worn out or not wanting to play. And so the product suffers because guys are taking it easy or they're not playing or they're getting hurt because they're playing too much. That becomes the issue.
Let's go to Jason in Waterbury. Hey, Jason.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Listen, you know what? This is the most foolish take I've ever heard in my whole life. These NBA players, they're already spoiled brats. They're supposed to be the most conditioned athletes in the world. And you guys are actually, not you, Tiki, I'm sorry. Evan, you're actually talking about bringing the season down and not that these guys don't play enough as it is.
I don't want to hear you. Because I think your point is just based on, like, just screaming and hating basketball.
Right. Well, I mean, look, I think part of that, his point, comes from how much they're getting paid. Like, the disconnect between what an average person makes, or hell, what even a top 5% person in this country makes versus what NBA players make is ridiculous.
Right, but the problem I have, it's not even about the money, because obviously
I think it's hard not to think about the money.
Well, but
some of these guys are going to be making $70 million a season.
No, but there will be less money being made, which means salaries go down. Like, yes, that's one of the give and takes of cutting down the amount of games.
That's the point.
That's not his point. His point is to just scream and yell that basketball players are lazy and they don't play enough. Meanwhile, there are more possessions than ever before. Mm-hmm. They're playing at a higher pace before.
Right.
The game is different than it ever was. So I hate that comparison. It's an ignorant comparison and it annoys me. And it usually comes from people that don't watch basketball. That caller, and I like him because he's called before, Jason. He's a good dude.
Right.
His opinion is just stupid. That's all it is. It's ignorant. He doesn't watch basketball, so he's just screaming and yelling, saying, they're lazy. Back in my day when I did watch basketball, they played all the time. They also didn't play at the same pace. It was just a different sport.
Right.
So take your prism of not liking basketball, put it away, and just understand that my reasoning for cutting down the season isn't to pamper athletes. My reason is we're seeing guys drop. We saw Jason Tatum, we saw Damian Lillard, and now we saw Tyrese Halliburton. Because they're playing a game at a pace we've never seen before, with an amount of games never seen before.
But it's also those two in particular, not Dame because he's just old, but Tyrese, who's young, and Jason Tatum, who's also young-ish, but not as young as Halliburton. They didn't stop. They played all year round. They basically played for the last 12 months.
Yes, that's part of it.
And that's not good. Like, I understand why, you know, some of these teams, we saw this in hockey, particularly a couple of few years ago when they were, you know, not complaining, but like just imploring the NHL to let them play in the Olympics. Part of the reason that the NHL doesn't want that to happen, and maybe one of the reasons that the NBA going forward might say, this probably isn't a good idea. You can't play year-round.
But you know what?
You can't. And if you are going to do athletics year-round, you got to diversify what the hell you're doing.
But you know what you can do in relation to your point about playing year-round is not start the season till late December.
I agree.
And that's what I'm asking for.
But my point is different. Like, we tell this to, like, 12-year-olds. Don't do the same sport year-round because it's going to lead to wear and an injury. Yet these guys, especially in the NBA, it's really only in the NBA. The NBA, NFL does not do this at all. Right, they protect the health of their athletes like no other sport in America right now. But these guys in the NBA, they're playing basketball all year, 12 months, 11 months of the year. It just, like, you're going to get hurt,
right?
Period. Because it's too much jumping and pounding. I know it looks like this beautiful sport, but it is physically demanding to play in the NBA.
So I agree with you. So how do you solve that? You're saying don't let them play in the Olympics.
No. Well, also don't play in the Olympics, but cut down the number of games in the season.
Bingo.
But I'm just telling you, that's never going to happen.
No, I know.
These guys want to be 100 millionaires, $100 million players per year. That's happening, by the way, with the new CBA. There's going to be an NBA player that's making $100 million a year.
We're on our way.
It's going to happen.
Guys in the 60s
and
already.
There's no way, even if you're risking injury for a Tyrese Halliburton, he's going to say, yeah, I want my health rather than the 100
million. No, you're 100% right, which is frustrating because it's one of those things that the owners and the players would never agree to because it takes money out of both people's pockets.
Right.
All I'm saying as a very simple but open-minded NBA fan who loves the sport is that this thing that the players and the owners would never agree to would actually help the sport immensely.
No, of course it would.
It would.
Because
first of
all, deprived of two of the great young players in the NBA we are not going to see until 2027.
And that's the main reason, but the secondary reason that I felt I had, which I can't be the only one, is I love this sport. I love the preseason. I don't talk about it because you'd roll your eyes at me, rightfully so, in the middle of October. I love opening night. I love the start of a basketball season, even when my team sucks.
Right.
But by the time the finals were going on, I said it to Tommy. I'm like, I'm sick of basketball. I've been watching it since October.
Right.
And here we are, the culmination of what was a great season, and I'm done with it. And if I'm done with it, then you would think that a lot of other people would be too. So it not only benefits the players like we talked about, but I think makes the game better for the fans.
I said this to Sean off air last week. I'm like, bro, we are in the middle of the NBA finals. Remember, the Knicks played a noon game the day after Thanksgiving. And that's not even the start of the season. It should start on Christmas. That should be opening day. Everybody loves the NBA on Christmas.
Right.
Start it on Christmas and end it the normal time.
And you know what starting on Christmas would do? Like, the NFL's declared war on the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And they've declared war on Christmas, quite frankly.
And they're winning.
And they're going to win. But if you're the NBA and you open the season with Thunder Knicks saying, all right, you know what? We're going to put this up against the NFL. You'll lose, but you know what you just did?
Right.
You didn't bring a knife to a gunfight. You brought a weapon to the fight. You know what I mean?
A bow and arrow, at the least.
Yeah. You're bringing something. Because your regular Christmas game, like, we're already 2 months into the season, yada-da-da-da, superstars, LeBron, look at the smiling faces. That doesn't compete with the defending NBA champions raise their banner against the soon-to-be NBA champion New York Knicks. Like, you'll do better selling that than selling what you're currently selling. We'll get back to your phone calls, but we saw something very sad over the weekend that needs to be addressed.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
There was a lot of cool stuff over the weekend. You had Fanatics Fest. You had the Mets actually winning a game. You had the Yankees winning 2 out of 3 against the Orioles. But Saturday was really fascinating because Clark Schmidt, who is on my fantasy team, but I did not start him against Sean and Tiki because strategy was in play. Clark Schmidt had a hell of a performance on Saturday. In fact, it was such a good performance, he had one of those old-fashioned things where he had not allowed a hit after 7 innings.
Oh, that's novel.
It was novel. But you could tell watching the game that Clark was done. You know, he was gassing it out in the 7th inning. He was leaving it all out there. His pitch count was over 100. And also, Clark Schmidt, remember, missed considerable time earlier this season due to injury. So it was obvious to me that Clark Schmidt was coming out of the game, but that didn't stop our very own Sean Morash from having a meltdown when Clark Schmidt was taken out of the game.
Of course they're booing. Of course they're freaking booing because you took him out during a no-hitter, bringing JT Brubaker to give up a damn hit. Of course you did. You ruined everybody's Saturday, Aaron Boone. Everybody.
Now, it's been a couple of days.
At least the one, man. What's wrong with you?
They were killing him that day.
A lot is wrong with me.
Are you better now? Have you realized the errors of your ways for ranting about Clark Schmidt being pulled?
Am I better now? That's the first question. Yes.
Good.
The errors of my ways, I think, have been lost in translation.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think a lot of people looked at that and their immediate reaction was, what did you expect? He threw 103 pitches. That's not my argument. I understand that baseball's gone this way. What I expected, or maybe expected is the wrong word, what I had hoped is that a manager who in his own playing career has an iconic moment he's remembered for would for once throw away the books and binders and at least try to handle this on a batter-by-batter basis entering the 8th inning. And he basically gave no shot. I hated Aaron Boone's post-game answers about it either. And I would just think, you know, a historian of the game, grew up in the game, his father, his brother, everything. I just would have expected a little more from Aaron Boone to not just be, again, his biggest criticism for everything is by the book.
What you would have done? You would have let him start the 8th inning, go batter by batter?
Yes.
Is there on any planet, he was at 103, if we're being exact.
Yeah, great.
Is there any planet where Clark Schmidt would have been able to get the last 6 outs with you thinking it's okay keeping him in the game?
Remember, now you brought up the 7th inning. The 5th and 6th, he breezed through. So if he throws 5 pitches and he's at 108, he can't come out for the 9th?
He's not throwing 5 pitches in all likelihood in the 8th inning.
Okay.
Probably throwing 8 pitches to the first batter he faces.
Evan, this is my point.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Okay, maybe
he's not completing the no-hitter shot.
He's saying if he gets him out in 2 pitches.
We didn't even try that. And Evan, this is where
he's not completing the game. That's why Aaron Boone took him out, which is part of the reason. He's already at 103. You're not going to be irresponsible with a valuable piece who's coming off an injury and allowing him to complete a game that he's not going to be able to complete. Right. He's not completing that game.
So there's 2 forks in a row I'm going to take in this argument here. Here's door number A I'm going to give you. Even if he's not going to complete the game, this is the other thing Aaron Boone screwed up in big time. Why? You left half the stadium, and now you could say the fans should have known better in the ballpark, half the stadium wondering, are they going to bring him back out? Are they going to bring him back out? Clark Schmidt didn't even get that moment of being able to tip his hat to the crowd, truly knowing he was coming out. Aaron Boone didn't want to have that moment on the mound where Clark Schmidt looked at him like, are you kidding me? And instead, Aaron Boone was probably worried about getting booed if he went out there. So you just took him out haphazardly in between innings.
So you were upset he didn't get a standing ovation walking off the mound?
I think that's part of it. I think Clark Schmidt had earned that right to go out there.
Sean.
Batter by batter. Also, he's not finished the game. My answer to that would be why, Evan?
Because it's irresponsible to ask a guy to throw not just a few more pitches than his career high, but probably 15, 20, 30 more pitches than he's ever thrown in his major league career. And he is coming off an injury.
Great.
And it's really hot outside. And you need him to win a championship, which is the priority. Yes.
All right. So outside of that Johan Santana moment, and this is not about the Mets because everybody points to the injury after. Where all of a sudden is all of this proof that everybody that pitches these complete games suddenly falls off a cliff and has these arm injuries?
It's not...
And no, hold on. I'm going to give you a hold on.
Well, give me a hold on, Teak.
That's good. That means he's dead serious right now.
We, and this goes for all of us, we just accept what every analytical person puts in there about pitch counts, we have come to accept baseballs like we do, Evan. No, we do.
I disagree with you. I'll explain Clark when you're done.
Clark Schmidt once threw 103 pitches. That was his max. So that suddenly became the number in this. Meanwhile, how many pitches is he throwing between innings? How many pitches is he throwing in the pregame warmups? You had no problem pushing him off that injury 7 2/3 versus the Angels earlier in the week. I just think that we're just so accepting of these pitch count numbers now, where baseball is about moments.
No.
Baseball is about memories.
So what, you feel robbed?
I do. I think the 45,000 people there got robbed. As somebody that's been at a no-hitter, that is arguably the most cherishable moment I have with my dad at a ball game, that these guys or these women, whoever was at this game, lost that moment. And or more importantly, Clark Schmidt kind of got robbed. And before you interrupt, David Wells and David Cone won a bunch of rings here. They're immortalized for their perfect games. Jim Abbott has talked about forever for his no-hitter here. Doc Gooden, his no-hitter here. This is not on the road. This is at Yankee Stadium. You need Clark Schmidt to win a championship. It's been 16 years since the Yankees won a World Series. There's a better chance Clark Schmidt finishes with zero rings in his career than there would have been. Maybe he throws a no-hitter, and that's his moment he could have had for his career forever, and he wasn't even given the opportunity to try. I have a problem with that.
The reason I wanted to cut you off is you said so many things I don't know where I'm supposed to attack.
Go ahead.
So let me go back
ahead. Because you're a sheep, so go ahead.
I'm not a sheep. I have an opinion that's evolved over the years.
Okay.
And the reason it's evolved is it's not about a magical number. So you got that wrong. It's not about he can't throw 105, 110. Mm-hmm. What you're asking an athlete to do is something they're not used to, something they've never done. That's what's uncomfortable. Like if Clark Schmidt was already throwing 115 or 120 pitches, I wouldn't be against that. But you're asking him to do something he's never done. And I don't know if his body's going to hold up if you do that. So instead of asking for evidence of other examples, I would tell you I'm scared of risking the future of my season on the unknown. And the unknown is you're asking Clark Schmidt on a hot day in a game you've already won because it's a blowout to do something he hasn't been asked to do. I think it is risky. I think it is irresponsible. And it's a disservice. Forget the 40,000 people at Yankee Stadium. How about the millions of Yankee fans that are there waiting to see a world championship? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's the problem. So it's not the arbitrary number. It's asking the athlete to do something they're not used to.
Right.
Okay.
And how do we know Clark Schmidt wasn't okay with this? Because it sounds like he was when you listen to his post-game comments where he said, I'm at the 103 mark. I have two more innings to go and 80 more games to go. You got to think about the bigger picture.
He's right.
So I watched Boone and Clark Schmidt in the postgame, and it felt very much to me like Clark Schmidt was doing the teleprompter, this is what I've been told to say.
The company line.
And Boone's answer sounded a lot like we weren't even allowing Clark to discuss us. Now, you bring up a good point. Okay, how do we know how he's going to respond to this? You don't. You know how you don't know? Because we never try these things. And for all the talk about pitch counts and saving arms, it feels like we see more arm injuries than ever. So how do we know that the way we've approached this is actually the right way to go about it?
My response to you would be, I would demand, if this is the argument you are going to have, that we're asking pitchers to go deeper into games as opposed to all of a sudden a guy who throws 90, 95 pitches on average to throw 130 because he's going to make you feel good with your father in attendance.
But
that's what's irresponsible.
But you mean to tell me there's that big a difference between 103 and 120? We're talking about 17 more pitches, dude?
Yeah, I do think it is. And I think it's you're putting your season on the line for something. And here's the second point that I wanted to get to. I think the no-hitter is dead. And it's not just dead because guys don't go nine innings. I don't think the no-hitter's cool anymore.
It would be cool if we ripped these rules out.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Do you give a rat's ass about Corey Kluber?
Because he didn't do it here. I would have if it was at Yankee Stadium.
I don't know
about that home moment sharing with the fans.
I think so. Let's forget David Wells and David Cone. That's a perfect game. And I think perfect games are very cool. Okay, that has not lost its luster because they're so rare. So please put them aside.
Sure.
Let's talk about no-hitters. Who are the two no-hitters you just referred to?
Jim Abbott and Doc Gooden. They're remembered forever.
Why are they remembered forever? Because you want to get specific on this? Why is Doc Gooden and Jim Abbott's no-hitters remembered forever?
Because they threw no-hitters at Yankee Stadium.
No, I'll correct you now, or at least in my opinion. I don't want to be arrogant and say
remember, I was at Doc Gooden's no-hitter. It has nothing to do with him being a former Met or all that.
No, it has to do with him being Doc Gooden, okay? If you don't want to call him a former Met, don't call him a former Met. It has to do with Doc Gooden. He was an iconic New York athlete who had major drug problems, who looked done. Basically, the Mets were kicking him to the curb. And George Steinbrenner welcomed them back, and a few starts in, he threw a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. If you don't think that's why it's cool, you lost. Let's get to Jim Abbott. I don't know if you know this about Jim Abbott.
He was born
no kidding.
With one hand
yes.
or one arm.
And right. that made it even more incredible. Yes.
That's why those no-hitters are remembered. If Corey Kluber threw a no-hitter at Yankee Stadium, nobody would care.
You're wrong.
Really?
Yes, you're wrong.
No, you're wrong.
No,
the two no-hitters you're bringing up are special and unique, A, because it was a long time ago, which I've left out. I think in 1996, no-hitters were cooler. I think in 1993, no-hitters were cooler. Besides that, there was something unique about both of those figures.
Were they cooler then?
I think so, yeah.
But, Evan, you're...
To me, at least they were.
But they're so rare now. I think they'd be cooler now.
No, I don't think they are.
And you described backstories. That's my point. Baseball, more than any other sport, has built these moments over time, these markers, these memories. That's what baseball is all about. And because those guys threw no-hitters, those stories you talked about around all of them came to life. Clark Schmidt having an injury-prone early start to his career, coming back from... Like, you would have built a story, and it would have been remembered forever on that sunny afternoon.
Dude.
And no, you know,
I think you're wrong.
And here is the worst argument I've heard over the last...
Have I made this worst argument or someone else has?
You have, because everybody keeps going to... And I'm going to use a word, but I'm not calling it because I know you're not. It's a lazy argument.
Which I don't even know what you're talking about.
The argument of you don't want to hurt your team from winning a world championship. Okay.
How's that lazy?
Here's how it's lazy. What do we complain about when we get to the postseason constantly? And this will be the case for Clark Schmidt. The early ripcord and using the bullpens in the postseason. He's going to be allowed to face the order twice through
the
order.
It's a different argument, Sean.
No.
It is a different argument.
If you're using the argument in June that you need Clark Schmidt to win a World Series, then I don't want to hear in October that he can only throw five innings in these playoff games and we got to rush to get freaking Fernando Cruz in the game.
Here's why your argument is wrong. Or flawed in this case. I would love to see pitchers go deep in a game. See, we agree with each other. I'd love to see it. I don't know why numbers are as arbitrary as they are. But you can't just decide to break the rule on one occasion. If you're going to break the rule, you got to break the rule all the time. You have to let your pitchers be more conditioned for the amount of up-downs and for the amount of pitches you're going to throw. You can't break it because it makes you feel good on a Saturday afternoon. So if your argument is I want to see pitchers go deeper in a games, watch this. I'm raising my hand. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But you can't decide it. Again, because something would be cool on a Saturday. It's a flawed argument. Sorry. Do you agree with me?
I'm kind of lost on why it's cool on that Saturday and not something that, one, the pitcher would want to see, the fans would want to see, and if it's not doing any damage, what's the harm?
Because I think it may be doing damage.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
But if you're asking an athlete to do something they're not used to doing, there's greater risk of injury. I think there just is.
There's a certain amount of pitches.
I can't buy that.
Yeah.
You can't be afraid of being hurt.
You don't think a pitcher who rarely throws over 100 pitches, right?
Right.
And I would love to not see that again.
I think it matters what the pitcher says. Like, you know, you can tell when you're getting fatigued as an athlete. You can tell when, man, I'm compromised. I can't hit the pace that I want to or speed that I want to on this particular pitch. This whip of my wrist is hurting my elbow a little bit. Like, you know when you're starting to feel worn out. If you're not, then you should be able to keep going.
Yeah, but sometimes the adrenaline may convince you of something that isn't best for you.
I don't know. I think the best pitchers, they don't get lost in the adrenaline of it. I don't think that happens.
But I think the manager has to protect?
I think they're tacticians. I do think the manager has to protect, but the manager also now relies more on numbers than he does on a conversation with his athlete.
Mm-hmm.
That's fact. We know that for a fact. And so I don't see the harm in it if Clark Schmidt is okay with it.
I think the harm is you're asking someone to do something they actually haven't done. And asking that to happen probably brings a greater risk of injury. And that's why I got what Aaron Boone did. And I'll tell you something else, just to back up my own point that I know you don't believe, which is I don't think the no-hitter means the same as it used to. I'm going to Citi Field tonight on a hot Monday night to watch Paul Blackburn twirl for the New York Mets. And I think a lot of this is Johan. I've seen it, okay? Even Met fans who weren't in the building, we saw it.
He's not getting through five innings.
If he threw a nine-inning no-hitter.
He's not, no chance.
Let's just say he did.
There's no way.
I know, but let's just say he did.
But it's not because of him. It's because of the weather.
You're probably right, but let's say he threw 78 pitches. It was a Maddoxian mm-hmm. complete game. I know it's crazy. I get that. But he does it. He walks a couple of guys, so it's not a perfect game because that's different, and he throws a no-hitter. I don't think it would cause the feels that you think it would.
Oh,
I think I'd come in tomorrow and say that was cool. I think Tommy would say, you got a real no-hitter, and we'd all have fun with it. But I don't think it does what it used to do. I really don't.
I think you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I used to be obsessed with the no-hitter.
If you're in the crowd for the seventh, eighth, you saw it when Dominguez caught the first out of the seventh inning, the oohs and ahs in the crowd. Evan, once you're there and you experience, I promise you, I'm not saying it's unbelievable.
Sean, you've done it before. So have I. We did it for very special things. Mine was the first. Yours was Doc. If you don't see the difference between that and Clark Schmidt on a Saturday or Paul Blackburn on a Monday, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, but
they're
Evan,
very different.
But here's the thing, Evan. You're undermining the argument of it's baseball, right? We say this for everything. Mm-hmm. Oh man, the Mets are amazing, best team in all of Major League Baseball. They lose eight games in a row. Eh, it's baseball.
Yeah,
right. Oh, this guy was hot and. He's got paid $700 million, $800 million, but now he can't hit over 230. It's baseball. He'll come out of it. Also baseball is, guy is just a good, maybe he's a very good pitcher. He throws a no-hitter. Like, that's the other side of it's baseball.
I think it's cool. I just don't think it's as cool as it used to be. That's all I'm saying.
But you bring up.
I don't think so.
And I'm a no-hit, you know, what's the word I want to use? I used to be obsessed with no-hitters. What's the proper word?
Snob.
But, yes. Mm. Not a snob.
Yeah, you were a snob about it. Like, you were on your high horse whenever there was a no-hitter. You'd tell the newsroom. Snob.
No, I know what he's saying.
I was a fan. You were excited.
I was an obsessed no-hitter fanboy.
Right.
Okay. Like any kind of no-hitter, not just a Met one, I would love it. I'd get excited. I thought it would be the coolest thing ever to be at a no-hitter. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to be at two now. Johan and Chris Heston. Wasn't that the Tyler McGill one? And I remember when McGill and the combined no-hitter, because I know it's combined and that takes away from it too. Right. I agree. I remember thinking, even if I miss a complete game no-hitter, it'd be cool to miss. I'm not disagreeing that it isn't a cool moment at a ballpark. I don't think it's what it used to be.
But you were at the combined one?
I was not.
Was that your last one?
No, Chris Heston. 2015. Now, were you into the combined no-hit attempt?
Okay.
Because let's face it, no one's talking about this. The Yankees got screwed! Gary Sanchez swung at a 2-2 pitch. The first base umpire, Jason Vacanti, said no.
He was sleeping on the job,
and
literally
the
sleeping on the
pitch
job.
Pitch got lined in a set for a base hit.
He was staring at some girl up in the, on the fucking deck or something.
That was bad. I'm going to try to do something I don't normally do, not scream and yell, make a coherent thought. I would not personally have been in the combined no-hitter because I'm going to be fair. However, if I was in the stadium, I might have felt differently. That was the other part of this. Aaron Boone going to JT Brubaker's first appearance in 2 years because the game was 9-0 was also insulting to the no-hitter attempt.
So you wanted to go more high-octane
reliever?
You're like,
well, Weisberg or anything. At least if you're going to do that to Clark Schmidt, can you at least have him have a chance at being a part of it?
I think Aaron Boone agrees with me with his actions. I think what Aaron Boone told you on that Saturday is everything I just said, which is it would be cool,
yeah,
but it ain't what it used to be.
And that's
it's
my issue.
It's just the reality.
That's my okay. And now just real quickly, just to counterpoint a couple things. You said he's never done it before. How does somebody get to do something they've never done it before? They try it and they go for it.
But you can't go to that extreme right away. If you
what
want,
do you mean?
Here's what I mean. If you want Clark
Schmidt's extreme.
Okay, so for Clark Schmidt to have completed the game on Saturday, he probably would have to have thrown 130 pitches, which is a very fair number. He was at 103. There were two more innings to go. 27 is an average amount over two innings. You don't argue with me.
He threw six pitches and eight pitches the two innings before.
Okay. The average number of pitches thrown is usually 13 or 14. So you want to go into this miraculous world where he only throws five? Okay. We could have that miraculous discussion. I'm being average.
Okay, but he's also playing the Baltimore Orioles, who are partly inept this season.
Yeah, they're not giving up on at-bats.
Of course they're not giving up on at-bats, but they're partly inept this season.
But you guys not even giving me the average amount of pitches being thrown shows you just already have your decision made. You don't want to even be fair. Both of them.
He shot under the average two innings before.
So that means he's going to do it again.
I don't know.
But okay.
It doesn't
mean
that he's not.
I'm just making my point to you that...
But you're making a point based on a fact that's not... That's not
right.
Provable.
Which was only my point.
I'm just giving him the average.
bring him out for the eighth and see how the average cooks.
Okay,
if he gets through it quickly.
Aaron Boone has said before he's not going to try to have a guy throw a no-hitter when he doesn't think he can complete the game in that amount of pitches.
Hence my issue.
Okay, you guys are both playing. Well, what if he only threw four pitches? The odds are small of that. That's all Aaron's saying. That's all I'm saying. It could have happened, sure. The odds weren't likely of that. So on average, he would have had to have gotten a 130. If the guy's never thrown more than 110 or 105 or 115, do you think it's smart to go to that extreme right away? That's what I mean by extreme. Mm. You're asking for a jump in career high in pitches by too high of a number, all to make you feel good about a Saturday afternoon. That's irresponsible. Boone's not irresponsible, luckily for you.
Or to make Clark Schmidt's career, Evan.
Oh, stop.
Because everybody talks about he's oft injured, and I understand
Where's
that.
Corey Kluber right now? You don't care about him.
Corey Kluber won Cy Young's. He wasn't a homegrown.
Where's Domingo Herman right now,
again,
bro?
Again, on the
Do
road different.
Do you even care? It was a perfect game. Do you even care?
Yes.
He was also a cheater.
This is my point. Domingo Herman, for all his troubles and everything, when he puts his head on the pillow and he thinks about his career, what is he going to remember the most? That night in Oakland when most of us were sleeping. Clark Schmidt, if he's been offering injured at this point in his career, something tells me that's not going to stop. He's going to be injury riddled the whole thing. So guess what? When Clark Schmidt's career's over, he had an opportunity to pitch a no-hitter that was taken from him. And had he thrown one, it's the moment he cherishes forever and it makes his career, and it was stolen from him by Aaron Boone.
All right. We'll give you the final word. And it sounds like Tiki agrees with you. So, Did you agree with him?
I just don't disagree with him.
I like it. I'll take it somewhere.
To quote a man who's been in the news lately, if you're not with me, you're against me. So you're against me.
Good thing this is sports.
Yeah, that was a little different. We'll come back. We'll get your phone calls. 888-808-1019. That is the toll-free number. Plus more on the Yankees weekend, the Mets weekend, and what needs to happen now with the Yankees going to Cincinnati and the Mets really trying to right the ship at home against the Atlanta Braves. 888-808-1019, the toll-free number. Evan and Tiki on the Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.